Hello and welcome to Bookish Meet the Authors. I'm your host, Nisa Gotu, and joining me today is author, speaker, TV host, speaking empowerment coach, Linda Ugolo, to talk about her empowering book, Delight in the Limelight, Overcoming Your Fear of Being Seen and Realize Your Dream. Hi, Linda.
Hello, how are you doing, Nisa?
Good, and you? Thank you for joining me today.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. And so there's a lot of books, of course, on the topic of speaking. Why did you decide to write another book on the topic?
I found that a lot of the books on speaking address how to create a talk, how to be better on stage and build your presence. And the addressing of the actual fear felt very superficial to me. It felt like there were some tips and tricks to manage the fear, but there wasn't anything that I could find that helped you get to the root causes and clear them away. And so when I discovered this process and developed a method for that, I really wanted to get the word out because I know there are so many people out there who struggle with this, who have gone to Toastmasters, who have taken speaking programs, or have simply avoided speaking altogether, that would love to get to the other side of it so that they can do the things they want to do and not feel held back by this.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's finding a foundation that help you create to fight those fears instead of this is what you do, this is what you do. But what maybe is the biggest problem is fear, which is a big problem in a lot of things, actually, if you think about in life.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that there's some programming that we have from our early experiences that we've learned to live with and work around. And so we get along with what we do, and it may form our decisions in what direction to go to. But it still may be knocking around in our unconscious and impacting us in unseen ways.
Yeah. So instead of being that person who's like, oh, I'm incredibly nervous, I might even throw up before I go on stage and everything like that, and being proud of the fact that they overcome that every time they have to speak, maybe you're going to teach them how not to feel that way every time they have to speak and have to overcome that obstacle every time.
That is such a key thing, because what you're describing is these management techniques or this acceptance that, oh, fear is just part of the experience of speaking and I just have to find a way to handle it and I'll be fine. But the problem is that, do you want to be living in a place of fear? Do you want to have to handle these things, or would you rather it just not be there to begin with?
Yeah, because that stress and anxiety is going to take a toll on you. Because I've heard that, because with acting too, like you hear actors say that they're always nervous before they go on stage and they keep going through it. I'm like, that's incredible, but that must be incredibly taxing.
Yes, I think you're right. It's draining energy. It's kind of like having apps running in the background on your computer, taking up mental bandwidth and the battery usage. So your battery is getting drained from that, which could otherwise be used towards other things.
Yeah, and you don't know that that's something you can fix. And that's a great idea. That's something that people don't think realize. How did you discover your method to help people get rid of their fear for good? Speaking of fear.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, yes, exactly, because I didn't know there was something I could do either. I also bought into all those cliches about just ignore your fear and do it anyway, or don't let fear hold you back, and pretend imagine your audience is friendly. It's like all those things are good things, but they're hard to do and they're hard to maintain, and it doesn't get to that underlying cause. So what happened for me is when I became an online coach, I realized, like most people, that, well, in order for people to find you, you have to get visible. So I took some video classes in how to make videos, and I must have made 100 videos all unlisted on YouTube because I felt very self-conscious about it. And this being despite the fact that I had been a performer on stage for more than 3 decades at that point. Yeah, but I didn't like to speak. I was fine dancing. I was okay singing in the group. But introducing a song was too much public speaking for me.
I understand that fear. I went to school for theater, and everyone said, well, isn't public speaking the same thing? I went, no. Up on stage, I'm not me. That's not my words. That's not me. It's public speaking, it's my words, it's me up there. That's very, very vulnerable. Like it's literally just you. There's no barrier, there's no one to hide behind.
Isn't that interesting? So
Yeah.
you understand that. So my video mentor discovered this first live streaming app called Periscope. Have you heard of
Oh, yeah, of
Periscope?
course. Yeah.
Yeah, so it just I think a year ago it closed, but it was the
Yeah.
first of two live streaming apps. The other one, no one has ever heard of it, was called Meerkat. And Periscope was in business for about 9 months before Facebook finally came out with live streaming as well, and then the rest is history, and here we are, right?
Yeah.
So I decided I was going to jump on Periscope because people were building up their following enormously by going on, excuse me, every single day. And I decided, okay, I'm going to do that too. So I downloaded the app, I put in my topic, I pressed broadcast, and people started to come in from all over the world because it at that time there was no algorithm. It's like something came up, everyone on Periscope got notified. So people from India and France and California, and it was terrifying. I
Oh,
thought I was like gonna leave my body. I just like exited my body, and I just had to force myself to say something coherent before pressing stop. And I did that. I thought, okay, next day it'll be better, but it wasn't really better. I wasn't totally freaked out, but I was still like feeling like I was going to have a heart attack. And by the end of the week, I reached out to my video mentor and said, "Hey, are you afraid like I'm afraid? Or am I the only one?" And she said, "Oh, everybody is afraid. You'll be fine. It takes about 75 days to adjust."
oh, that little time? Okay.
Right, exactly. And so I thought, geez, okay, I'm gonna like brace myself
Yeah.
and just do this, and I'm gonna get to that number. So every day I tried something to manage my fear. I did jumping jacks and kicks and punches and meditation and affirmations and crystals and deep breathing and all these things that actually did work. It took me about 45 minutes to get ready for each broadcast because every time I jotted down my bullet points, I would start to panic.
Oh,
Then I got to
wow.
day 75 and I thought, okay, this is my day. And then I stopped and I thought, wait a minute, I'm still managing my fear. My
Yeah.
heart is still racing. I'm not that much more confident than I was that first week. What's the matter here?
Learned
What's
how to
wrong with
hide
this
it well.
picture? What's that?
You learned how to hide it well, but you didn't actually
I
have it.
learned exactly, I learned how to perform better. But inside, I was still suffering.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it. I thought, here, I'm showing up, but how long can I keep this up? It just takes so much energy. And I didn't want to spend the time on overcoming this feeling just to get on for 10 minutes. I want to be able to work, get on for 10 minutes, and then get back to work. But
Especially
no,
when you
like,
consider 45 minutes to prepare for a 10-minute video, that means that you'd never be prepared if someone just says, "Oh, we're going to do something on the fly." You'd never be ready because you
Right,
wouldn't
it's like,
be
here, let's take out our camera, let's take out our phone and just record something. You couldn't ever be.
No, you'd be like Chandler from Friends every time someone put a camera on him. He could smile naturally, put a camera. It's the same
Right.
idea. You will never learn if it takes 45. If you've learned to develop a habit and a method of like, I need to prepare, but it's 45 minutes. If you don't have that 45 minutes to manage your fear, basically, you're never going to be able to get past that step of doing it on the fly, doing a live show where things can happen whenever, you never know.
That's right. That's right. And that's not to say that it's not ever worth it to spend that kind of time
Oh, yeah, of
preparing.
course.
Sometimes it is, but not for a daily live stream.
Yeah.
So I came to the same conclusion and I decided I'm going to get rid of this. I know I have the tools to get rid of this. What are they? So I made a list of all the things that I knew. I actually have a master's degree in expressive therapy, so I have a lot of tools from that. I've done a ton of personal development over the years. I just gathered a lot together. So the first thing I did was, okay, I want to find out what this fear is even about. Okay, I can try to get rid of it, but what is it? So that's when I pulled out something called focusing, where you close your eyes. It's very simple. You close your eyes, you feel into your body. to where this thing is living and you ask, what is it trying to say? And what came back to me is, I'm going to be attacked.
Yeah.
I thought, okay. Is that like saber-toothed tiger attack, or is this something in my childhood attack? Oh. And then a memory came to my head of my two sisters attacking me, not on one, but on multiple occasions, usually when my mother put me in the center of attention, because I was the goody-goody, they were naughty. She would say, why can't you girls be more like Linda?
Oh.
And that was their cue, as soon as she was gone, to rush and kick me in the shins, call me stupid, tell me to shut up. And suddenly I thought, oh my gosh, this is it. Or at least this is a part of it. Of course, I don't feel comfortable being the center of attention, because I learned that at times, at least, it was dangerous to be put in the center of attention. That I could get attacked. And not only that, I realized that I risked losing my sister's love.
Mm.
And it's funny because I thought about this. I kind of resisted it because I thought, well, we're good friends now. So that was a long time ago. I don't feel that way now, do I? But when I thought about it, I realized I still did. I felt like if I were to become successful, if I got too much attention, they would be jealous and they wouldn't love me anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then I thought, okay, now I know what I need to resolve. And I had tools. I had things like EFT and creative visualization. I journal. I do movement therapy, all these things that I could combine together with forgiveness and just resolve it, like let go of it in a way that I didn't realize I needed to.
Yeah.
I thought that I had gotten over it. I didn't realize it was still alive, imprinted in my body.
Yeah.
And once I realized there was that, I thought, okay, what else is there? And went, oh yeah, that time in seventh grade when all the girls decided no one's going to talk to Linda. And I felt excluded. Oh my gosh, I probably felt like nobody's interested in what I have to say.
It's the trauma you experienced as a kid. It's whatever it was that taught you this is a bad idea or this is. It's interesting that you're saying this, because it's something that people say about finding whatever it is, working on themselves, is what are the root of why they feel the way they are. But no one applies it to public speaking as if, oh, this is just a fear. It's fine. Like, no, but if it's a fear, there's a cause for it, which I found very interesting, that you're like, wait, there's another reason for this. Let's find out that and work on what's causing this and not just cover the symptoms, which is my heart is racing. That's actually amazing, because you'd basically...
Yeah. You know, I was so glad you said that, because it is, of course we do this in other areas. And of course it would impact us in public speaking. So it wasn't so much an aha as a duh.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think this is it, that we know these things to be true, but I haven't seen anyone apply it to public speaking.
Yeah. Well, now you have.
And now I have. And the interesting thing is that I had my experiences, but everyone has their own experiences and they're all different. And what happens is that it's usually not one thing that happened. It's probably a few things that happened, or many, plus a few messages that we got that we believe to be true. Mm-hmm. But we usually combine these together, make some conclusions, and we decide this isn't safe.
Yeah.
We might not even realize that we have done that, but our bodies want to protect us. So it's taking care of us. So that's why I say that the fear of speaking is not a random emotion without a cause. We may not be aware of the conclusions that we've made, but they're there.
And the biggest enemy to basically us having to do anything is our inner critic. So what role does the inner critic play in the anxiety of speaking?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, because when I first got into this work, I assumed that it was always us feeling that we're going to be criticized from other people, the places that we were bullied or criticized or diminished. But then I realized, no, we carry that around inside ourselves. We're the worst ones. So if you want to feel safe in front of other people, you have to feel safe in, with yourself first. If you're not safe with yourself, of course you're not going to be safe in front of other people. You're your first jury, so you have to find a way. Say that again.
You're the toughest one.
You can be the toughest one. Now, my belief, actually, just like with the fear, that the critic is not there endemically as a critic. I think that it's a part of us that has been wounded and has taken on this new role to protect us. Yeah, but previously, it was not the judgmental one, but the judge, as in the wise judge, the one who looks at situations and tries to help you navigate it in the best of ways. Unfortunately, what has happened is that it's helping you navigate it in the worst of ways, because it's trying to, it's kind of absorbed what it's learned from the outside, from those experiences, and held like, oh my God, you don't want to be that again. You don't want to, you don't want to sound stupid. So you call yourself stupid.
Yeah.
It's almost as if by calling it out on ourselves first, it'll take the sting away if someone else does it, like my sisters.
It's actually something that reminds you of two things. One is like an animal being back into a corner, a wounded animal being back into a corner, just attacks everything. So it's like your inner voice is scared of doing, having that happen again. So it just doesn't know how to. And the other thing is, I don't know who said this, but I remember growing up, it's like, if you make fun of yourself first, no one can make fun of you.
Right.
If you do it first, then no one can do that first. So maybe it's that kind of that logic. If I tell you you're stupid first, then no one else can call you stupid because I've already done it.
That's right. That's right. But we don't realize the damage that it does.
Oh, yeah,
and it does do damage. Yeah. Yeah. So I believe that what we need to do, just with listening to the fear and what it's trying to say to us, we need to listen to the critic and hear what it's saying, but also to help the critic know that there are other ways for it to communicate, because we've developed this inner dialogue and this style of speaking to ourselves really early on, before we had the maturity and the resources that we have as adults now.
Yeah.
Now we have ways that we, over time, we learn to communicate better with other people. We can learn to communicate better to ourselves.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've heard this before on your podcast about being your own best friend and not speaking to yourself in any way that you wouldn't want to do to speak to someone who's dear, that you want to be on the same team as the rest of the parts of yourself. You don't want to be against yourself. If you have a goal to do something, you want all the parts of yourself, all the voices in your head, to be working together to achieve your dreams and desires. So you have to find a way of bringing that critic in to your side of your point of view.
Yeah.
And I particularly like listening to what it's saying and saying, okay, I hear what you're saying, but can you say it in a nicer way?
Yeah.
And also, what ideas do you have for me? So it's like I engage this voice to come up with the positives and the solutions.
To bring something to the table. You're inviting it to bring something to the table instead of having to stop to be heard.
Yes. And instead of fighting it and being angry at it and saying, get to the back of the seat, I say, no, I want to hear what you have to say. But let's just change your tone of voice.
I forgot what book I read this in, but it's the idea that when you're on your journey, you take fear with you, but you just kind of leave it there, but you don't fully give it the reins of like controlling everything, but you listen to it, you're aware of it, but you don't give it control.
That is very much like Elizabeth Gilbert of Big Magic.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's what
she says, you put it in the back seat, don't let it touch the controls.
You're aware that it's there.
I like that. I especially love her writing, but I don't quite agree with that, because I feel like, again, it's like making that voice an enemy rather than an ally.
Yeah,
I feel like we can create an ally from that voice, so that you really do feel like that voice is one of your cheerleaders.
Yeah.
That voice is on your side, and you're recognizing that it does want the same things that you want.
Yeah, it's doing it in a different way.
It's doing it in a different way because of the experiences that you've had, and it's learned this odd way of expressing itself.
So in your book, you have a whole chapter about using your voice, speaking of letting everyone come to the table and talk. Do you have to take voice lessons to be a competent speaker?
I don't believe you have to, but I think you're missing out if you don't pay attention to your voice, because speaking is a physical experience. And so often we, as a child, we love to speak. Every child who has learned to speak has gone through some passage of delighting in making sounds and playing with them and expressing themselves and having fun just with the physical experience of it all. Mm-hmm. And we have lost that enjoyment, that delight, mm-hmm. and that possibility to have pleasure as we speak. Mm-hmm. Because we just think it's like from brain to words, and there's like, we don't even, it may not even go through our mouths. We know it goes through our mouths, but it's almost like we lose track of this amazing apparatus that we have learned to train and manipulate in order to create the words, the sounds, the tones that allows us to express ourselves from inside. And when you bring awareness, mindfulness, and also perhaps practice and exploration to rediscover that joy, then that adds such an enormous dimension to the pleasure of speaking. It's like, I get to make sounds. I get to play with my voice. I get to hear myself. And not just that, but I'm making meaning, mm-hmm. which hopefully is communicating something of value to other people, whether it's information or entertainment or just play.
That's amazing. What can people do to first help them? Sorry, I have all your things are saying, like, oh, these are all things that I can apply to my real life.
Oh, yay, I'm so glad.
What can people do first to help them feel more comfortable speaking? What are your tips?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to circle back to the very beginning about management, because I think oftentimes management is where most people are going to look to begin, and they're easy. So the first thing that I would suggest is, rather than focus on the things that you don't want, a lot of people go, oh my God, I have this thing coming up. Oh, I get so nervous, my heart races, I sweat, I shake, my voice trembles, whatever it is, I blush and everybody can see. I can't eat for hours, I'm going to throw up, you know, whatever it is, I'm not going to sleep the night before, whatever it is that's going through your mind, swap that out for what you do want. Make a list of how you want to feel. I want to feel confident, calm, relaxed. I want to feel like my breath is easy. I want to feel like I'm inside my body. I can feel my feet on the floor. I want to feel focused. I want to feel zen. I want to feel like I'm being helpful. I want to let go of my perfectionism. Whatever it is that you want, make a list of all those things, and then take a minute or 5 minutes to put yourself in a state of relaxation and visualize yourself speaking with all of those things. Visualize your time leading up to speaking with just how you want to feel, and visualize yourself after speaking with how you want to feel about how it went. Because when you do these things, you're starting to create a new groove. You're starting to pre-pave your experience. Whatever you focus on is going to grow. If you're focusing on the panic and the downward spiral, you're going to amplify that.
Yeah.
Every time you start to feel a little bit of nervousness, say, oh, that's my reminder. That's like the little ding on my phone to take what I do want and bring that into my focus instead. So you're focusing on all the things you do want instead of the things you don't want. If you do that several times before you speak, that's going to help you enormously.
So instead of saying what you don't want and attracting all that negative energy, it's saying, it's t- changing that, so that way you attract all that positive things you want instead of focusing on all the stuff you bring.
And you're exactly, and you're also giving yourself a chance to practice that. So a lot of people think of, oh, I've got to practice the words I'm going to say. I've got to practice my script and practice my notes. No, practice how you want to feel.
Those are all important, but if you're also terrified and nervous, it doesn't matter how well you're speaking. It's
yeah, exactly. I want to give one other tip. So a lot of times people do get, you know, this kind of jitteriness in their body. I recommend giving that jitteriness someplace to go. I mentioned at the beginning that I would do jumping jacks and kicks and punches. You can dance, you can shake yourself out. Give the jitters someplace to go and bring a sense of strength into your body. So whether that's where the kicks and punches come in, or power poses, or
those actor exercises that you see them make people make fun of in movies.
Yes, all of those things. That is going to help. Now, this is all management techniques, but management techniques do help you get through the experience. And if that's what you need to do, do it.
Yeah, that's great. But I think movement in general helps. I personally need to, what I do to help me if I'm nervous or if I'm scared, put something on that makes me laugh, because laughter brings me energy. It puts me in that space of like calm down, but it also, again, that happiness, it puts that happiness in my body, even if it's somehow artificial slightly, because it's coming from the outside within. But then I'm always more energetic after I've laughed, and then ideas start popping in my head, and then I feel a little bit more ready to do something because I've just had a moment of joy.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. I love that you do that. And I think shifting into a higher state of being is one of the things that allows you to give a peak performance, actually.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, in my book on chapter 14, it's all about how to put yourself into that state of peak performance, and by shifting your energy. I do not have listening to comedy, but
I always listen to something funny. Is it like I put on a show that I love that makes me laugh, an episode that made me laugh, a TV show, whatever it is. But it's always
okay. I want to know what they are. I want to know what they are.
I don't know. It changes constantly. Right now, I discovered the British TV show, The Big Quiz, The Big Quiz of Everything, and it's usually a lot of comedians that are on that show. So at some point, sometimes the wheels fall off the wagon, and it's just a bunch of comedians. And it's just it's a live show, but it's a bunch of comedians and quizzing each other about knowledges about everything, whatever year it is. But it's hilarious because sometimes they get the right answer, sometimes they don't. But it's all people people who are there who know how to laugh, who know how to have a good time, who don't take themselves too seriously. And it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm, that's so great.
It always changes what I watch. It may be a movie I love to watch, a TV show, but it has to be something that's going to bring me joy.
That's great. Yeah, I've been starting with a long time ago series called The Gilmore Girls.
Oh, I love Gilmore Girls.
The script is hilarious, and I'm so appreciative of the dialogue of the writers, and yeah, it's a laugh out loud experience. Yeah,
it is. So you have something special to offer my listeners. Do you want to share what that is?
Yes, I have a speaker empowerment kit. So I already spoke about mental rehearsal or envisioning what you want, and the speaker empowerment kit has a guided visualization to allow you to do just that, both for speaking in person and another one for speaking on camera. Yeah. So if you are mostly speaking online, you've got something to help you with that. If you're speaking mostly in person, you've got something to help you with that. Plus I have 61 power thoughts that are helpful for reading through to, as I said, swap out the other thoughts that you have in your head with something new, simply, whether or not you believe it or not, but it simply takes the place of that negative thinking that's going to bring you into that negative spiral and keeping you in the present moment.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
You can get that at empowermentkit.me.
Empowermentkit.me. And then where can people find your book and also you?
Yes, so for my book, you can go on to Amazon or any online bookseller, or go to my website, lindaugelow.com. That's lindaugelow.com.
And that's where also they can find you. Like, so do you have social media they can find you? They want to connect with you.
If people want to find me on social media, I am most active on TikTok.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. That's my happy place. I love TikTok. I think it's a fabulous social media platform.
It is. It can be. I've seen that. Well, thank you, Linda. so much for
Thank
joining me
you, Lisa.
today. It was lovely having you on the show. I wish you much continued success. And thank you, everyone, for joining me on Bookish Meet the Authors. And see you next time. Bye-bye for now.